Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 116. We are discussing the Players Championship on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's redundant European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Redundant, eh? Yeah, well, good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What are you doing in your redundancy period? Because clearly there's no European Tour golf now for the next, potentially 2 months?
We'll see. The Indian Open's still on the schedule right now as of Tuesday morning for next week.
You were saying that they won't let certain countries into the nationalities in.
No. If you've got an Italian visa, you're not allowed to enter India.
So that's half the field gone then.
Yeah, so no Italians in the field if they do play next week. But yeah, we'll have to keep close to it. It's the whole schedule's been properly decimated at the moment, isn't it? If they don't play next week in India, then the next scheduled event on the European Tour proper is Valderrama at the back end of April. And, Spain's starting to be hit as well by this coronavirus, as is most of Europe, isn't it? So, we shall wait and see. It's unprecedented start of times, Mr. Bamford.
Our friends the other side of the Atlantic are starting to get hit by it as well, aren't they? Mm. I think they were kind of looking over at Europe and the rest of the world kind of laughing, but now all of a sudden they're cancelling major tennis tournaments after all the players have turned out in California.
Yeah, it's starting to impact lots of stuff, so we're going to have to keep very close to it, because clearly if it starts to impact the PGA Tour as well, then it's going to...
It is very worrying with the Masters 4 weeks away.
Yep. Masters. Well, obviously, we've got Cheltenham starting today over here in the UK, which is going ahead.
Huge, yeah.
With crowds in attendance as well. But,
quarter of a million over 4 days, yeah.
We'll have to keep close to it, Steve. It's going to be an interesting and maybe frustrating time over the next few months.
From a sporting perspective.
In terms of golf.
And betting.
Yeah, in terms of sports, full stop. Yeah, absolutely.
Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Please subscribe to the podcast and drive the popularity of the show. I know that you guys are actively doing that. Thank you very much. We had record downloads last week, which was great to see for the Arnold Palmer Invitational and the Qatar Masters. Naturally available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Paul is available on Twitter at Golf Betting. Let's drive him towards 10,000. Hey, Paul.
Getting closer. 8,600 or thereabouts last time I looked. Going well.
I'm at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I recorded that earlier this morning. I will put a link in the description box to that. I'm really enjoying the Golf Betting Shows at the moment, but they're getting longer and longer because I just keep wittering away. I noticed 37 minutes this morning and unscripted.
Yeah, you know, people screaming at you, Steve. Oh, can't these
shows need to be a minute long?
Yeah.
Oh, I only get a spare minute in the day to listen.
Just tell me who you're tipping. I've done all the flannel around it.
Please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts / iTunes. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. I was begging for reviews last week and I got them. I got three, but I like to ration them out over a period of time, Paul.
Okay.
So we got a Podbean review. So a review left on our Podbean channel.
All right, very good. Is that the first one?
That is the first one, but it also gets fed through to iTunes, so you can do that. So it goes towards our iTunes rating. It's from Dave Green, and he's Dave Green 57, and he basically says, "Magnificent show, best I heard. The guys are so knowledgeable and super tips and clued up. Good luck, buddies." So, Dave,
very nice.
Thank you very much for the time you've taken to leave us a review on Podbean. That is absolutely fantastic. We have others. I will read them at the start of the future shows. Right. Now, I did plan, and I've completely forgotten, to replay your Matt Every first round leader tip from last week's podcast. Because as you were actually talking about the Matt Every tip last week, if you know, a lot, most of these podcasts now, they actually film the podcast and it goes up on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you'd have been watching me as you were talking about your Matt Every 175-1 first round leader bet that came in, I was just kind of, I had my head in my hands. I was chuntering. For God's sake, Paul.
Leave it alone.
How can you constantly throw money into the pit of Matt Every first round leader? And the thing I found highly amusing about it was that Matt Every was in completely the wrong side of the draw. Now, if you look at Thursday from last week, I had five tips. And most of them decided they weren't going to play before they actually hit a shot. That's fine. Got my stake back on JB Holmes. And then I had a split then of 2 and 2. 2 in the morning wave, the winner, Tyrrell Hatton. And 2 in the afternoon wave, Abraham Ansah and our friend Bubba Watson, who, for the record on the podcast, I will never tip ever again in a technical scoring event where the wind's blowing, because he's absolutely rubbish. You know, that hence why he never plays well at a US Open. And it was a US Open type event, wasn't it, effectively?
Yeah. Very reminiscent.
So I'm not binning Bubba into my bin of never tipping ever again, you know, with Paul Casey and the rest. He's there. He's there to be picked, but I have to be a far more up to speed about where we use him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So World Golf Championship, couple of weeks' time, Paul, put him up. He's still putting unbelievably well, Bubba. Unbelievably well. I think he was the top 15 again. Straight. Anyway, I digress. So Matt Every was in the side of the draw that played 3 shots on average harder than the morning. And he goes and pips Rory McIlroy, first round leader, with a 7-under, 65. Can you believe that?
It was an incredible round, wasn't it?
Mate.
It's funny. You look at these things, and I'd already placed my Matt Every bet before it became clear that the first or the Thursday was going to be far easier in the morning than it was in the afternoon. So when the tee times came out and we looked at them and it was, well, you know, you said to me, did you place that Matt Every bet and the other ones I mentioned on the podcast? Well, yeah, but...
Oh, I said to you, they're dead in the water, Paul. Dead.
Yeah.
Dead. Yeah. He's on the wrong side of the draw. And you're like, oh, well, what can you do? And you're going, Bamford, he thinks he knows it all. the bloke just steams in, mate.
He putted incredibly, particularly on his back nine, he putted incredibly well. And that is the thing with Matt Every. He is either extremely good or, most commonly, extremely bad. And I think, what did I say on the pod? Did I say that he's the kind of player who will go and shoot 63-85 and miss the cut? And he shot 65-83 and missed the cut. So, slightly off in terms of the actual numbers prediction, but the aggregate was right. Yeah, obliged 175-1, which was a very, very nice start to the week, I must say.
I'm looking back at his record, Paul. Now, this was 2017, and we picked him up a couple of times 2017, didn't we?
Yeah.
June 2017, St Jude Classic, 64, first-round leader. 2 weeks later, played the Travellers. He was sixth in round one. In July, Canadian Open, which I believe was Glen Abbey. First round leader. 2 weeks later, went to the Wyndham Championship, and this is where I snared him. I think 150-1.
200-1.
200-1, was he? Guess what? First round leader. Yeah. So, listeners, Paul, mental notes, all of us, it's likely to happen again.
Yeah.
It's likely to happen on Bermuda grass, although the Canadian Open was played on bent grass and a mix with Poana. So, not necessarily all bent grass. Bermuda grass. But with Matt Every, it's gonna potentially happen again. It's almost coming across as an auto bet, Paul.
He does. you know, you've talked about win equity quite a bit over the last few weeks, and there's first round leader win equity in certain players who always start, or seemingly always start, quickly. I mean, you look at the likes of JB Holmes, the likes of Rafa Cabrera Bello, the likes of Kiwadek Afi Barnrat. These are the kind of players that you never, it never surprises you when you see them at the top of the leaderboard after the first round.
Day one.
And, you know, there's different ways to look at it. And, yeah, every last week was a punt, wasn't it? You know, given how he'd been playing recently, his previous round was 85. So you looked at that. If you'd have combined that with the poor draw that he got, then you'd have left him alone. But
even last year, Matt Every was playing some god-awful stuff. And I'm talking here Korn Ferry and PGA. Even last year, 2019, Matt Every, he was fifth in the first, after the first round in Bogota, Colombia. He was third at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. He was fifth the week. This was all in three consecutive outings. Fifth at the Suncoast Classic after day one. He then waited a couple of months. Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail Championship on the Korn Ferry, third. And Byron Nelson Championship on the main tour, fourth. And he was playing awful. He actually finished second for that Byron Nelson the whole of the tournament, which I do kind of remember. That was the one that Sung Kang won. But yes, this is it. I think Matt Every now, first round leader, is just go, isn't it? It's like Thunderbirds are go.
If there's, you know, certain things add up with it, then and you're always going to get a decent price because his first round leader odds are going to be a, you know, they're going to be calculated based on his outright odds. And if you look this week, I think he's 750-1 to win the tournament and 300-1 first round leader, which, again, is the right kind of number if you're looking at it proportionally. But his first round leader equity is probably far, far better than that.
Yeah. Have you had a punt?
No, I haven't.
Each way places they offering on the first round leader markets this week?
You can get up to seven.
You can get seven. Okay.
You can, yeah. Typically five, but there are a couple of bookies gone six, and two or three of them.
So we'll make a pact on the podcast that Matt Every, over the next couple of months, you know, it's not going to be every week, and there's going to be periods where he does absolutely nothing, but we're going to be on him at relevant courses, yes? Mm. Shorter courses, blah, blah, blah. Okay, right.
Yeah, Bermuda, as you said, is one of those attributes that are well worth looking at with him. But as well as Matt, as well as Every, you picked up the winner last week, Tyrrell Hatton, which was a fantastic
50-1
effort.
And I had a nice chunk on him, didn't I? 1.5 points. So that's a real P&L profit booster.
Much
needed. Thank you. So all in all, we had the first round leader and the overall tournament winner on the PGA Tour.
That's a big breakthrough for Tyrrell to win on the PGA Tour.
Well, I've got a discussion point here, Paul, on my notepad. Discuss the difference between Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood when in contention.
Well, I think what you see...
Two consecutive tournaments, two consecutive weeks. Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood in the lead, Tyrrell Hatton in the lead. Discuss.
I mean, it wasn't straightforward. It wasn't a straightforward tournament, was it?
It wasn't going to be. Players. It couldn't be, could it?
No, I mean, as it got progressively firmer, faster, and windier, and tougher, it was just a war of attrition, wasn't it? In the end, four players finish under par in the end, I think?
Yes.
And that back nine from Tyrrell, I mean, yeah, he went in the water, what was it, on the 11th, wasn't it?
12th, so, I think, yeah. Doubled the 12th or 11th. Yeah,
that's right, yeah. It was around there, you know, and... He looked at that and he thought, well, that could be the end of his, not the end of his tournament, but that could be the end of his real chance to win this golf tournament because he could start to wobble at that point.
Doubles,
reality hits home.
Bogey, you know, all of a sudden we're four over through three holes. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And you've got the likes of Leishman, who was playing well alongside him, Sung Jae Im, who just won the week before, even Sung Kang, who I'd put up at that. For the tournament at 150s, he wasn't a million miles away at that point. Rory, you know, he needed a strong back nine, didn't he, Rory?
Yeah.
But the difference, going back to your point, the difference between Tyrrell and Tommy is that Tyrrell has that ability to convert. He has that, I don't know, that ruthless streak, I guess, that allows him to win these golf tournaments. And you know, there were a few hairy moments coming home. The again, which I think it was the 13th, where he hit it deep into the rough on the right-hand side and played an incredible shot over the water to land on the green and make his par. And again, from having made a double of the previous or a couple of holes back, you know, that's the whole tournament could have been there to lose. Yet he took the shot on, made the shot, fantastic effort, and parred his way in. And the last two holes were super impressive as well. To, you know, fairways, greens, make your par, get yourself out, and jobs are good. But yes, very, very impressed with Tyrrell Hatton. And as you said, I think, you know, part of your rationale last week was when Tyrrell's found that bit of form, he is quite apt to go bang, bang. And, you know, he can win two tournaments on the trot. He can contend in one. He can convert the week after. He's proven that before in his
Yeah, he does it on the career. European Tour, doesn't he? Yeah. You can see that. You can see that pattern. And that's a lot of this with golf betting. It's patterns of how players work.
Yeah.
Some players, you see, they get a top 10, they disappear for a couple of weeks. They cannot string results together. Who knows why that is? And then others can string 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks together consecutively.
You know, and you look at Rory, again, going into the final, he was still a couple of shots behind going into the final day. Mm. He was the favourite to win the golf tournament, despite being a couple of shots behind. Yep. Yet he finishes fifth. Again, I think that's three consecutive fifth-place finishes he's recorded now. So his price is never going to drop. His price is always going to be in that kind of bracket where he's borderline unbackable. And you expect him to finish in those top positions. And he adds another small chunk of OWGR points to his tally for finishing fifth. But he's not winning golf tournaments either. He's not, you know, he's not Tiger Woods in his prime and absolutely smashing tournament after tournament. It's hyper consistent, but it's not ruthless, is it?
It's not Tiger, but then there was only ever one Tiger, and probably only ever will be. Mm. And people get frustrated, but you're getting Tiger-like prices on Rory without the win equity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 5-1, 6-1, 7-1 each week.
Yeah.
You know, you have this perennial, you know, is it all eggs in one basket, each way shot to nothing, or be a little bit more, I don't know, adventurous and try and pick up these winners. And the winners are out there. The winners are out there to be had if you can get the rationale. So again, congratulations on Tyrrell. That was a super, super pick last week. Very good indeed.
What did you make of Qatar?
A little frustrating, I guess, from a betting perspective. Three of the guys I backed made it through to the weekend, Zanotti, Valimaki and Brandon Stone, but they all kind of trod water, particularly on the final day, because they were all in a position where had they shot a 6 or 7 under on the final day, they'd have been right in the mix, but none of them could actually muster that. It's one of those typical European Tour events where it's the lead's like a hot potato coming down the stretch and no one really wants it. Campillo was a couple clear at one point, then he's making bogeys. Drysdale was there all the way through. To be fair, once they'd got over that and got into the playoff was incredible. And then they were playing the 18th. The 18th was a tough old hole. It was 513 yards, something like 520. And they both made birdie on the first playoff hole. They both made birdie on the second playoff hole. And don't forget, this is Drysdale going for his first win on the European Tour for, you know, however many years. You know, obviously described as one of these, you know, journeyman types who's clearly produced a lot of decent results over the years, but never managed to get over the line. And it didn't do anything wrong. You know, Jorge Campillo was just making bombs in the playoff, 20, 30 footers to keep it ticking over and eventually grounding down. But if you look at the incoming form for those two, I mean, Campillo was miscut, 67, miscut. Drysdale was 55, 58, miscut, 125-1, 350-1. And with no course form to go on, just eyeballing their current form, they would have been incredibly difficult to pluck out. The only thing you could say with Campillo was that he had finished second at Doha the year before. So if you were kind of using some local performance logic, and could ignore the current form, then you might have plucked out Campillo, but you'd have done extremely well to get Drysdale into your team last week at 350s.
So random as sin, really. Random, really. Just totally random.
In truth, I wasn't close to either of those guys, so one for the to resign to the notebook in terms of what happened, but not really close, really. But yeah, good event, lovely, flat, you know, cracking playoff, really, really interesting playoff. So a bit of entertainment to wet the whistle before the final round of the API last week.
Do you want to quickly mention our Betfred Players Championship competition that we've got running?
It's
only for UK residents. Is that, am I right in saying that for a start?
To claim the prize, you need to have a Betfred account. So you need to be in a jurisdiction that allows Betfred to open a Betfred or have a Betfred account to claim the £50 free bet prize.
Yeah.
And this is one we've been running for, I think this is the eighth consecutive year we've been running with Betfred. So thanks to those guys.
Yeah, thank you, Betfred.
Their continued support with this competition. And it's always really, really popular. And obviously we're going to TPC Sawgrass, so the whole theme of the competition is around how many balls will go in the water in total over the course of the 4 days at the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass. Clearly, it's always one of those interesting sidelines to the tournament, and they'll have little balls in water ticker that will tell us how many are going along at various points during the tournament. And the PGA Tour do a summary each night to tell us who managed to find the drink and who didn't. Always a bit of fun. But yes, we want you to guess how many balls are going to go into the water over the course of the 4 days. And as a tie break, we want to know what the cumulative score to par for the 17th will be over the course of the week. So you think it's going to play exactly to par, then that would be zero. If it's going to play under par over the course of the week, you might, minus 10, minus 20. If you think it's going to play particularly tough, and then we've seen years where it's played cumulative to par in three figures. We've seen it, 100 over par for the course of the 4 days. So it can vary wildly, as can the number of balls in the water. Some years you're into the 20s, some years it's 60, 70, 80 even balls in the water over the course of the 4 days. So you need to take into account the conditions, you need to take into account the wind direction and speed, lots of different variables to throw into the pot. Either that, or just have a punt, just have a complete guess and see where you get to. The details for how to enter are on the Steve's preview in the on the website. And basically, you can email us, you can tweet us, you can fill your details or your entry in on the Facebook group. There's a dedicated thread on there. And see if you can get close to getting the correct answer.
Have you had an entry so far?
I haven't yet. I tend to leave mine a little bit later because I want to see what the conditions are going to be like. I want to try and work out what the wind direction is going to, how it's going to impact. We can second guess where the whole positions are going to be over the course of the 4 days. So depending which way the direction or which direction the wind's coming from for the 4 days kind of determines how difficult that hole may play. So I tend to leave it a little bit later. Not that it matters, because I'm not going to claim the prize should I win it anyway, so it'll go to someone else. But I do like to try and get it as close as I possibly can.
We can talk about weather conditions in a short while, actually. I think it's going to be a different tournament to the last two that we've seen, which have been absolute brutes, haven't they?
Yep. It looks a little bit calmer, doesn't it?
Okay. Players' Championship, then. I won't say the fifth major because clearly it's not. another laughable statement from the PGA Tour. That one. I think they regret saying that. What it is, though, it's a loaded tournament. You actually look at it, top 50 in the world. I think there's only Tiger Woods, bad back, Shugo Imahira, making his money in Japan somewhere and probably can't travel, and Lee Westwood at the Cheltenham Festival, hitting ridiculously priced accumulators every day,
like he always does.
I'd love to be standing next to Lee Westwood when he plays those accumulators. And just, oh, just have
a peek at his betting slip.
With his VIP account at Bet365.
Yeah. Have a look through his Twitter feed later and you'll probably see him nailing another 20 grand five time here.
So we're effectively seeing this week 47 pool of the world's top 50 in attendance at Ponce in northeast Florida. You can get the depth of the field when you look at the alternates, I always find, guys that can't get in the field and are on the shortlist. This week, we've got Brendan Steele, Harry Heggs and Maverick McNealy. Can't even get in the tournament.
Yeah.
And those guys have been playing very good golf of late. They're not in. They're just standing there, keeping loose on the...
Yeah, it tells you a story, doesn't it?
It's a fantastic tournament. I don't want to get too high up in the course because, you know, pretty much everyone knows it unless you're completely new to golf betting. But it's the most controllable golf course on the planet. We'll go into a little bit of detail. What I want to do first of all, though, Paul, is go through the top 10 of this week's predictor model.
Yeah.
We're finding more and more people using our predictor. It's completely free of charge. I've put a link in the description of the podcast to it. If not, just type in, I don't know, golf predictor or PGA Tour predictor into Google or a search engine of your choice. You'll find us. You can use it free of charge. There's some excellent variables in there this week. Who plays well on a firm golf course? You know, these are rolling stats over the last 5 years. Who plays well on Pete Dye Designs? It's a Pete Dye golf course. That kind of information all available on the predictor. Bookmaker of the week, we've already mentioned, this isn't, by the way, listeners, this is based upon what we're seeing this morning. It's Betfred. They've got a bet £10 and get £30 in free bets, plus 30 free spins, new account offer available at Golf Betting System. That is over and above what you would get if you went directly, which is bet 10 and get 30 without the free spin. So if you want to sign up to Betfred, and we mention them pretty much every couple of weeks now on the podcast because their odds are outstanding, and they're also giving away additional each-way places, which is lots of bookmakers don't, they're just a great golf bookmaker right now. They're outstanding this week on price. Got to say, McIlroy at 7, these are all market-leading prices right now. As we're recording this early Tuesday morning in the United Kingdom, 7-1 on McIlroy, 28-1 on Patrick Cantlay and Sung Jae Im. Their best price 30-1 on Xander and Webb, previous winner. Their 33s on Adam Scott, 35s on Ricky Fowler and Patrick Reed. Some of these prices, Paul. These are interesting times in golf. I tell you, Brooks Koepka at 40-1. Can't remember the last time. Tyrrell Hatton at 45s. These are all best price with Betfred. 50-1 with Gary Woodland and Colin Morikawa. 55s on Kuchar, previous winner. 60-1 on Paul Casey, Tony Finau. 66-1, Justin Rose.
That price on Rose is mad, isn't it? When have you seen 66-1 on Justin Rose?
I can't recall, mate. It must be going way back. 2010, 20, I don't know. 2000, who knows? It's a long time ago. That shows you the state of the guy's game. He has thrown the Honma clubs in the bin, though, hasn't he?
He has indeed, yes.
Yeah. They're now apparently in discussions about the severance package. But it's like, well, you can't, even though they're giving you so many million yen, billion yen probably, million dollars and sterling, you can't throw away your golfing career on the basis that all of a sudden you're a ball striking machine that then can't hit a fairway or a green for love nor money anymore.
No.
It'll be interesting to see with Justin Rose how quickly he can get back into the ball striking monster that he was, because not that it'll be available on anti-post markets right now, but you might be able to get a really good price on him at Augusta.
Yeah. You wouldn't imagine that he's going to stay in the doldrums forever because he's that good a player, isn't he? Mm. And it's just going back to his refinding his core strengths and getting his game back. But yeah, at the moment, the prices are incredible that you're getting around.
You won't be surprised to hear, well, you know anyway, but you won't be surprised to hear that I was on him the year that Sergio beat him in the playoff. Yeah. Was it playoff? No, he beat him in regulation, but it was virtually a head-to-head, wasn't it? We got Betfred also, leading price. Jason Day, 70-1. Abraham Anser, 80-1. Henrik Stenson at 80-1. Louis Oosthuizen, they're just all over it like a rash. Oh, yeah, Jordan Spieth, 90-1. So, yeah, Betfred, bet 10, get £30 in free bets, plus 30 free spins at Golf Betting System. Just type Golf Betting System or Golf Betting Tips into Google or your search engine, you'll find us, and you can sign up to that enhanced offer. Key terms available on the website. Top 10 of the predictor model. So this is what I pulled together yesterday to help with my research. 10, Tommy Fleetwood, 25-1 with Unibet, 7 places each way. 9 is Benny Ann, 90-1 with Betfred, 7 places each way, all 50 odds. 8, Justin Thomas, 16-1 with Unibet, 7 places each way. 7, the Florida Golf Monster, who is Sung Jae Im, 28-1 with Betfred, 7 places each way. Still a bit of juice in that, really, but you're seeing him now on a par with Patrick Cantlay and Dustin Johnson. Wow. You wouldn't have thought that a few weeks ago. 6, Daniel Berger, 70-1 with Ladbrokes. 5, Bryson DeChambeau, the scientist, 22-1 with Coral, 7 places each way. 4, this is a big price. Big price for a man that's in the top forward predictor. Harris English, 175-1 with Bet365. Mm. They are 6 places each way this week, a full quarter odds.
Yeah, Harris is interesting, isn't he? Because he's been playing some nice stuff. His record here is abysmal, isn't it? Which is probably explains the price, but yeah, always an interesting one.
3, Ricky, 35-1 with Betfred, 7 places each way. 2, Webb, 30-1 with Betfred, 7 places each way. Number 1, Robert Gammes. No, not Robert Gammes. Rory McIlroy. He was, I think he was like minus 30 strokes gained last week, Robert Gammes. How he's got the cheek to keep playing that tournament at Arnold Palmer, I do not know. Anyway, Rory McIlroy, 7-1 with Betfred, 7 places each way. So McIlroy, Simpson, Fowler, top 3. Before we go into the detail and I start talking endlessly for 15 minutes, what do you make of the players in terms of the course? What do you think it favours? Because do you know what? I think, personally, I think it sets out exactly what it wants to, the kind of mantra of the tournament is. The best player on the week wins the tournament.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there are a variety of different ways you can get around the track. And the overriding note that I have every single year is you must have a short game.
Yeah.
You've got to have a short game. You've got to be scrambling well. Because otherwise you're just making far, far too many bogeys.
Yeah.
There are players that can get around the course by, you know, metronomic tee to green performance. But if they're making bogey every time they miss a green, then they're still unlikely to win the golf tournament. And if I don't take that advice from myself, from the notes that I've made historically when I get to this tournament, then inevitably I pick the wrong players.
You're so right. You're so right. And don't you find that scrambling, and you know, you can classify it as strokes going around the green. I'm still very debatable about strokes going around the green. It has to be said, because strokes going around the green is it's all about people that effectively chip in all the time.
Yeah.
Scrambling, of course, up and down. You have to have a short game round, and it's so underrated. I maximise scrambling full throttle, 10 out of 10 on the predictor model this week.
No, and I can see why. It's absolutely critical, I think, because it's not an easy course, particularly when the conditions are tougher, which it has been for the last couple of years, you mentioned a minute ago. And it's not going to be quite as tough this year, but all that is likely to do is mean that the winning score is going to be perhaps a little bit lower than it has been over the last couple of years, into the teens, I expect. So you're still going to need to make birdies, but you've still got to keep your card clean. You've still got to maximise those opportunities to retain your par. And I want someone who's shown significant form with their short game over the last few weeks to justify inclusion in my team for this week.
If I maximise the throttle on our predictor model for scrambling, Now, right, you're far more into the detail. This is a rolling number over what period of time?
Yeah, it's rolling over 6 months across all of the tours where we have statistics. So okay. Predominantly the PGA Tour and the European Tour, but the Asian Tours and the top Sunshine 10, Tours as well.
Top 10 for scrambling. Bud Cooley, 10. Daniel Berger, 9. Bryson DeChambeau, 8. Abraham Anser, 7. Benny Ann, 6. Doesn't surprise you. Kevin Na, 5. Doesn't surprise you. Adam Schenk, 4. Lanto Griffin, 3. Doesn't surprise you. Brendan Todd certainly doesn't surprise you, 2. Number 1, it won't surprise you, Paul. Webb Simpson.
Mm. Yeah, and
players that can get one. Up and down serious amounts of time.
Yeah.
And that's a 6 month rolling number across all the main tours. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of names in there. And again, you know, you can just eyeball their recent performances and their recent skill stats over the last few months. And it justifies those rankings you just read through. And I think, you know, that as a starting point for this week, that's no bad
scrambling
thing. There's a variety of different elements you're going to need to build into it to get to the eventual winner, I think. But scrambling is going to be key.
I think you're so spot on. Just to back that up, as I always do on the previews, and I mention in the podcast each week, last 10 years, if you look at traditional stats for the winners here, and you take all of their key statistics and where they were ranked in that field that week, average it all through. Driving distance, 29th. Driving accuracy, 27th. That's quite high for driving accuracy. Sometimes it can be in the 40s. Greens in regulation, 15th. That's quite low. Proximity to hole, 32nd. And then we get scrambling, 12th. Putting average, 12th.
Mm.
Short game.
Yeah. You've got to be on it on and around the greens. I think that is the simple fact. And you've got to avoid the trouble. You know, it's an all-round test. It is an all-round test, but you're going to need to be minimising those mistakes.
Do you think this is also, because it's such a nondescript golf course where every kind of... last year was laughable, mate. Rory McIlroy was first. Jim Furyk was runner-up. I mean, that's just like North Pole, South Pole.
Steady Jim, yeah.
And that says everything about the stadium course at TPC Sawgrass. Yeah. It's absolutely
in a nutshell, it doesn't suit a single particular type of player.
And Brandt Snedeker was first for greens in regulation that week. Yeah. It's just craziness. He's never first for greens in regulation, ever.
If he'd have putted well, he'd have torn the field to pieces.
If you're looking at it from a strokes gain perspective, so I'm taking 16, 17, 18 and 19, I'm doing exactly the same process, where they were ranked in the field for each facet of their game. Strokes gained off the tee, 16th. Strokes gained on approach, 24th. Now, I'm hearing a load of information out there on Twitter and on saying that strokes gained approach is the most important variable here. Well, not according to this. Strokes gained off the tee, 16th. Approach, 24th. Strokes gained around the green, 10th. Yeah, got ya. Strokes gained tee to green, 6th. So what it's actually saying is that if you're hitting the ball nice and straight, doesn't have to be long off the tee, and you've got a fantastic game when you're missing the greens, that strokes gained tee to green metric's very strong. 6th overall. Strokes gained putting. So if you're reliant on a hot putter from like ridiculous distances, 23rd.
Yeah. Yeah, it tells a story, doesn't it?
This is it as well. Honda Classic, the numbers were very like that for PGA National a few weeks ago. Last week when we were doing the same exercise, it wasn't about tee to green, it was about putting, wasn't it? Extreme strokes game putting. Then this week we reverted back to PGA National Honda Classic. Tee to green important, putting not so much.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the winners of this or the players, you know, the likes of Robert Allenby have done well here over the years. And, he's not quite down there with Boo in terms of his putting performance, but he's not a million miles ahead of him in terms of his putting averages and ability. So, not all about putting this. That's for sure.
If you actually look at the way that, Webb Simpson won this a couple of years ago, yeah? Webb's he's steady, isn't he? He's a steady player. He was negative on approach. He actually lost. He lost on approach for the whole week. Yeah, but around the green, he was ranked third for stroke gain around the green, and he was absolutely lights out on putting. He was virtually lapping the field with the putter.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, it's, to me, it's a par 72. It's sub 7,200 yards. The number that really grabbed my attention out of everything that I wrote about the course, apart from the fact it is the most controllable golf course on the PGA Tour, they can do whatever they want with it. It's been very dry in Florida, this part. Whether they let it dry out as much as the last two tournaments, I don't really think so. The wind looks like it's down this week, so I reckon 15, 16 under will win this, because that's pretty much the score they're looking for, yeah?
Yep.
So this isn't going to be a technical British Open type of grind or a US Open kind of grind. The number that gets me about this golf course, 14 of the 18 holes have water hazards. So guys that are addicted to driver, like Bubba Watson, Tony Finau and the like, not interested. You're going to make far too many mistakes. To me, it's patience. It's all about a certain patience, isn't it? And Rory had that. Rory had that last year. He said he could be a little bit aggressive because it was a softer golf course. He also said that that favoured him. So he was. But the thing with Rory, when he's in his prime, he's not only long but he's straight. Yeah. I mean that's pretty. But you're not going to beat that, are you?
Long and straight beats short and crooked every time.
Before I move on, I just want to mention two very important things about this golf course. We are playing the Players' Championship now in March. In recent memory, it used to get played, of course, in May, after the Masters and after Quail Hollow. Mm-hmm. The golf courses now in March are completely different to the ones that we saw in May. Now, these greens this week are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass, correct?
Yeah.
But they are over-seeded. Yeah, overseeded. So there's a level of grass that comes through the Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass that sits on the top. That level of grass is Poa trivialis and Velvet Brent grass.
Yeah, which makes sense, doesn't it? You know, it's coming out of the winter in the northern hemisphere, so the Bermuda will have sat dormant for a period of time. So they need to keep the greens alive, don't they? And they overseed it with Brent and Poa Triv, as you said. So
whenever you hear that these are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens, they are not. They are Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens, but they are overseeded with Poa trivialis and Velvet Brent grass. So actually, they're not typical Bermuda grainy greens in the slightest. They've got Brent grass in them.
Yeah. And in terms of your interpretation of that, Steve, you think they're going to play more like Brent grass than anything else?
There are courses on the PGA Tour that use this technique, yeah?
That's right.
Yeah. One of them, one of our favourite tournaments, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Mm. They are, to the word, the same green types.
Yeah.
So if you're seeing players that putt well or do well in Phoenix, bearing in mind that Webb Simpson won this 2 years ago and then won the Phoenix Open last month, would suggest he likes the greens, and they're very similar greens. There's also other courses out there. TPC San Antonio, where they played a Valero Texas Open, same kind of greens. And also another Texas golf course, the Golf Club of Houston, where they used to play the Shell Houston Open the week before the Masters. Those greens were the same. But I'll put a note in there. When they played the Houston Open in the fall, they weren't overseeded greens. So the last tournament they played there in 2019 weren't have featured the same green types. The ones in May did feature the same green types.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the course. Also on the course, the Bermuda Rough and Fairways have got ryegrass and fine fescue within them now. And I noted this. This was from Rory. Jordan Spieth said it, and also Rory McIlroy said this. He said, when you miss the greens, you're not having to contend with that Bermuda grass anymore. You're not having to guess how it's going to come out, whatever. So it lends itself to more aggressive play. Basically, it's easier to chip around these greens now because they are overseeded, again, with ryegrass and fescue, which is a very, if you think about it, it's a very upstate kind of rough. It's normally surrounding bent grass greens, yeah? Ryegrass and fescue.
Yeah.
But this golf course now features that. It hasn't got that gnarly, aggressive Bermuda where no one knows what the hell's going to happen when they're chipping out of the Bermuda. So two very important bits of data there.
Yeah.
Right. A couple of other stats here before I go into my tips. I am desperately scanning through the winners list of the Players' Championship as we speak. I haven't seen anyone since the tournament started in 1974 who successfully defended this title.
No.
Nobody.
No, and that doesn't bode well for Rory, who's yet to defend as a professional anyway, is he? In terms of his career.
As I was writing this preview yesterday, and you're now redundant, I said to you, Paul, can you have a dig? Because in my mind, this was the case, and you had a dig, and you couldn't find it either. I said, Paul, can you just verify, has Rory McIlroy ever defended a title in his career? And you dug into it, I dug into it. No, he hasn't. So we've got Rory defending the Players' Championship, a tournament that's never been successfully defended, and he has never successfully defended a professional title, going back to 2009 when he won his first professional title in Dubai.
Yep, 7-1
favorite. Doesn't shout 7-1 all in on Rory, does it?
No.
Right, okay. Trends are there to be broken, but yeah, what can we do?
Yeah, we'll see.
Another thing I want to bring to the party. I've gone back, and I did this last year, I went back to see, when this tournament was played in March, what kind of things did we see from the winners? And there's all kind of weird winners. Hal Sutton, Craig Perks, he won here as a rookie, never played the course in 2002. Then you got some really class players like Tiger Woods, Davis Love III, Adam Scott, although I think it was his first ever win, Adam Scott, I might be wrong. It was one of his first ones. Right, okay, listen to this. Hal Sutton, he'd finished 29th at Bay Hill, 7th at Honda. Tiger Woods, he'd won at Bay Hill the week before. Craig Perks, 56th, 65th, Bay Hill and Honda. 2003, Davis Love III, he finished 2nd at Honda 2 weeks before. Adam Scott had finished 3rd at Bay Hill the week before. Fred Funk had finished 23rd at Bay Hill the week before. Stephen Ames had finished 7th at the Honda Classic 2 weeks before. Rory McIlroy last year, so we jump from 06 to 2019, first players that they went back to March in, he finished 7th, 6th at Bay Hill the week before. So that, to me, is shouting big, loud and proud. You want to be backing players who have played in Florida over the past 2 weeks. And I look at last year's top three or four finishers behind Rory. Jim Furyk had finished 9th at the Honda Classic. Your old mate Johnny Vegas, he'd finished 23rd at the Honda Classic and 16th the week before at Bay Hill. Yeah? Tommy Fleetwood had finished 3rd at Bay Hill the week before.
Yeah, it's a little bit of Florida, Bermuda.
It's like a concrete block over the back of the head, isn't it? It's saying you need to be backing players who have played in Florida before they arrive at TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah, can see your logic.
There's a lot of love for Dustin Johnson out there, but I didn't see him playing in the last two events in Florida. There you go. Maybe it's price blindness.
Yeah. These players getting to, you know, immensely backable prices, aren't they?
So. 28-1 on DJ. I mean, when was the last time we saw that? At some point, these players are going to come right, aren't they? And it's can you get on them that week? Are you going to be early enough
to reward you at a mad price, aren't they?
I can see why people are doing it. I can see why people are back, you know, DJ, Brooks, Rose, all of these players. I can see it, but it's not for me. Right, I think we've said just about everything we need to say, really, before I get into my actual four players that I've tipped up.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add?
No, I'm all good, apart from, and you and I agree on one of them, the other player that I've backed completely flies in the face of your Florida
And so does Eddie Pepperell, didn't he? And he finished 3rd last year. Yeah, and I think he flew in from Bognor Regis or somewhere. So You know, things fly in there, but I've also spotted a mistake in the preview, which I'll be sending to you to amend in a very short while, because I'm effectively saying that Rory McIlroy finished sixth in Mexico and second in Mexico. That was his form coming into the tournament last year.
Yeah, that's good going. He went to Mexico twice.
That's fantastic. Yeah. One thing I will say, McIlroy sixth and second. Webb Simpson, 21st and 5th. This is immediate form. Siwoo Kim, miscut, 22nd. Jason Day, 5th at New Orleans, 23rd at Harbour Town. Ricky Fowler, 9th at the World Match Play. Martin Kaymer, 18th and 23rd in his previous two. Tiger Woods, 4th, 1st. Matt Kuchar, 13th. KJ Choi, 3rd. It is kind of smacking. Last appearance, yeah. I don't want to be seeing poor finishes or miscuts, really.
Nice bit of incoming form. Yeah, it's all, an elite tournament, isn't it? And in here
These are strokes gain metrics of the last winners since Kaymer. In their outing before. Tee to green, 18th. That was Kaymer. Tee to green, Fowler, 5th. Tee to green, Day, 5th. Tee to green, this is Siwoo Kim, won at 500-1. He was in the top 18, tee to green, the outing before. Simpson was tee to green, top 20. Rory McIlroy, tee to green, top 6. So there's quite a few trends here. They have led me to the following four players. I am going to go in reverse order in terms of price. First one I've tipped up, and I can't believe I got him at 200-1, and I certainly can't believe I got him at 10 places each way with Paddy Power. Mm. Paddy Power and Betfair are the only bookmakers this week going 10 places each way, 50-odd, so well done to them. They're treating this as a major, so that's really, really good. I've gone for Russell Henley.
I can see your logic.
Three-time winner on the... I'm not saying he's going to win, but, you know, I've got 40-1 that he finishes in the top 10 there. Mm.
Yeah, that's a big old price.
2013 Sony Open winner, 2014 Honda Classic winner, 2017 Shell Houston Open winner. So Texas, Florida, Hawaii. That's where he's won his three PGA Tour titles. We're talking about these overseeded putting surfaces, yeah? And we all said, I've already said, Scottsdale, I've already said, Golf Club of Houston. He's finished 16th and 15th in Scottsdale. He's finished 7th, 4th, 5th, 1st, 8th at the Golf Club of Houston. Would suggest that he can putt on these surfaces, yeah?
It's a big tick in the box there.
I noticed a few outings ago at Riviera, you know, you check the leaderboards, and all of a sudden Russell Henley's at the top of the leaderboard at Riviera on Poana. And you just think, that is not that guy's bag at all. Mm. Yeah. In the end, it all got a bit too much to him. Big tournament, blah, blah, blah. 17th at Riviera he was. But he was 4th after 54 holes. And his game that week, 11th strokes gained on approach, 4th strokes gained around the green, lovely, and 7th strokes gained tee to green. Then a fortnight ago, on Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass Greens at the Honda Classic in Florida, he finished 8th. Strokes gained on approach, 1st. Tee to green, Paul, 2nd. Just got to have him 200-1.
Yeah, that's good going from a guy that you know can putt extremely well when he's on his game.
He's also the kind that does well on sort of tougher golf courses. I mean, that Honda Classic win, I do see a huge correlation between TPC Boston and this golf course. And you just think it through. Rory McIlroy has won at TPC Boston. Webb Simpson has won at TPC Boston. Jason Day has finished 2nd and 3rd at TPC Boston. Ricky Fowler, he has won at TPC Boston. Martin Kaymer, 7th TPC Boston. And Tiger Woods, you won't be surprised, he's won at TPC Boston.
Yeah.
I look at Russell Henley. He was 2nd there in 2014. Yeah, and he's got like 11th at Augusta. He's 3rd at East Lake on those Bermuda grass greens. That's a tough old golf course, East Lake, in 2017. I think Henley at 200-1, I couldn't believe... I was scanning through the prices and I thought I was going to find Russell Henley at the ubiquitous 80-1, something around that mark. And I just kept going and going. I'm thinking, have they missed him? Have I missed him? Kept going to the top. No. 200-1. Yep, he's in.
Yeah, there's clearly been a few like-minded people over the last 12 hours or so since your preview came out. Although, again, if you look through, there's still a little bit of 200s available at various spots. So, if you fancy a bit of Russell Henley at that price, then fill your boots.
Where are you at in terms of, because you said to me pre off the mic, you're not devilishly into this week, are you? There aren't many players you really like the look of.
I've struggled, I must say. I do like Henley. I've got a little bit of on Henley at the longer prices, as you said. I tend to want to try and pick out some longer prices, but you know, I've looked at the likes of Joel Damon's going to be interesting this week, but he's around 100-1.
Awful price.
You know, he's going to be popular because people are going to look at his last two starts, 5th and 5th, going to look at his last year performance, 12th, and put the two numbers together and think, well, yeah, that's well worth taking on. Johnny Vegas, you mentioned earlier on, he played well last year, and there's been a few sparks with him as well. Tom Hoagie was another one, and who caught my attention. Yeah, I think there's worse bets out there. Whether he's the kind of player that is going to be able to perform at a level like this, it remains to be seen. Ryan Moore was another one who caught my eye a little bit last week, and he's got some progressive form around here. And again, this course doesn't necessarily suit any type of player, does it? So, you know, I'm not sure that his kind of game shortcomings are going to be exposed massively on this particular track. But no, I did struggle. I mean, those are the kind of players that I suspect I'll be playing in DraftKings this week. And with DraftKings, and I'm sure some of you will notice, they've put a millionaire maker style of tournament or contest together this week. So there's a $1 million up for grabs with their main event this week. So I'll be having a little tickle on that. But they're the kind of names that I think I'll be including in some of my teams a little bit further down. There's Jason Duffner was another one. He's
playing better stuff, Duffner.
Yeah. He's got a very good Pete Dye record and doesn't mind a bit of firm, windy conditions. Yeah. Not that it's going to be particularly windy this week by the looks of it. But
he's playing a lot better, Duffner, under the surface. Yeah.
6,100 on DraftKings.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Duffner.
Yeah.
Is a very, that's not going to go unnoticed. He's going to be highly owned, I'm sure. So
one who was clearly right bang in our face last week was Keith Mitchell, 5th.
Yeah.
He was 2nd for strokes gained off the tee. He was 31st strokes gained tee to green, and he had a red hot putter. 3rd for strokes gained putting. But I said to you, you look at Mitchell, I think he's a Sea Island guy. 1st at the Honda Classic last year, 6th at the Bay Hill, and then he was, of course, 5th last week again at Bay Hill. He's also got a top 10 at Quail Hollow, which translates quite well from a correlating course perspective. Yeah. I could see Keith Mitchell being, because we just know he's a Bermuda grass monster. Mm. He's the kind of guy that might nick a place, top 10.
Yeah.
Or an each way top 8, something like that. I mean, I'm seeing him as big as 200-1.
And this is the kind of event where you're going to find in that top 8, top 10, you're quite likely to find, you know, 2, 3, 4 players of 3-figure prices and above.
Oh, God. Every single year.
Yeah. Just trying to pluck them out is going to be the challenge. But, there's no one smacking me around the face saying, you must back me. So, and I think I'm probably going to focus more of my efforts on DraftKings this week, just to see if I can get that winning team and snare the $1 million this week. We shall see.
Well, in your current state of redundancy, you've got a lot of time to be able to pull your 175 teams together, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm not going to be jumping on the Indian Open just yet.
What you'll do is you'll throw away all your winnings from Matt Every last week, and you'll put them, give them to DraftKings players.
Chasing the million.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, quite possibly.
66-1's my next pick. It's not the greatest of prices, but I tell you what, I've seen worse about the guy. And again, he's another one of these, he's a real Marmite character. You either like him or you hate him. I must say, when I've tipped him up before, he's never really delivered for me. But there is something about him. To me, this golf course is about short game, but it's also about excellent consistency and accuracy with your iron playing from 200 yards and out. And you can see that every year. Somebody that's good, consistent, say top 70 in the PGA Tour stats with their 200 yard and above approaches, greens in regulation. But also, not only do they hit plenty of greens, but they can hit it relatively close as well from over 200 yards. That seems to be a real consistent look to me. I couldn't get rid of this guy because he's playing well. We know that he's done well in Florida. He's Floridian. He's ex-world top 20. Yeah, he's there. I've got to, yeah, he's shorter price than Abraham Anser and the like, and Henrik Stenson and Louis Oosthuizen and Sergio Garcia. But I thought it was just about backable. I thought we might see something really crazy like 50-1. Daniel Berger, 66-1. I mean, this guy's form at the moment, he's hot, isn't he? Ninth at Scottsdale, fifth at Pebble Beach, fourth last time out at PGA National. So there you go, fourth in Florida, PGA National. And his numbers, you know, his tracker numbers that I'm seeing. 11th, so 8 weeks, past 8 weeks, 11th for a strokes gained approach, 7th tee to green, 14th for putting. And I do like this number, this strokes gained total number. So effectively, I'm looking strokes gained past 8 weeks across European Tour and Main Tour. Who are the form guys coming into this tournament, strokes gained total? So effectively, it's strokes gained current form, yeah? He's fourth in this field. Strokes gained total.
As you say, playing some nice.
And stuff. I'm finding him at 66-1. So I think he was like 29th in the betting, and he's fourth strokes gained form. Yes, mentally he can be all over the place. He might disappear. He might miss the cut. He might start with a 78, then make the cut on the number and finish 30th. But he's playing great golf, Daniel Berger, and you actually look at him, two-time winner on the PGA Tour, both on Bermuda grass in Memphis. He just fits. He was ninth here, I think, 4 years ago, and he's a decent player when he's in his prime. He actually played for the Americans in the President's Cup a few years ago.
Yeah.
He's no mug. But yeah, he is perennially overpriced, Berger. Because I think he pops models because his numbers are so good.
I can see your logic with him. And he was one of the ones that was quite prominent up on the All Predictor this week as well, wasn't he?
Do you want to talk about my next tip? Because I know that you love him as well, and it stops listeners getting bored to my voice.
Yeah,
my Michael Caine impersonation, as someone said to me on Twitter this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you and I had talked about this event at the back end of last week, didn't we, to try and get an idea of who we both fancied. And I think we both stumbled across the same guy very, very quickly, which is Gary Woodland.
Yeah.
You know, again, you're looking for that strong form coming into it, 12th and 8th over his last 2 weeks. He's got his last two starts. He's got that little bit of Florida action that you're looking for as well. And whilst he's not absolutely torn he's not exactly torn the place up when he's been here over the last few years. He was 11th back in 2014, 30th last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you put it all together with a player who's as capable as Gary Woodland, clearly the major champion Gary Woodland, to find him at 50-1 is a tasty price. And there's a quote that you mentioned last week when talking about Gary on his previous start, which was the Honda, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was fifth going into the weekend. I thought I was quids in, mate.
Yeah, absolutely.
US Open reigning champion in fifth spot. I think it was a shot off the lead or two off the lead. And you just know that golf course is going to be US Open tough all weekend. There was one name I wasn't expecting to collapse down the leaderboard. And who was that? Gary Woodland.
Yeah, but again, from your... what you gleaned from how he'd, what had actually happened. He'd had some particularly bad luck landing in divots over the course of the...
three holes. Three sand divots in five holes in the fairway, naturally, across a five-hole stretch around the turn. And he went double bogey. That was it. Done.
You can't account for that. No. You know, even if you're not making the doubles and the... You know, if it's not wrecking your scorecard, it's gonna knock your confidence and knock your approach a little bit because you're having some terrible bad luck. Doesn't mean he's playing badly. If he's smashing it in the fairway, just happens to be a bit unlucky. So no, I'm with you. I think Gary Woodland's got a great chance this week at 50-1.
I think Gary as well, he isn't Tony Finau. He won't get to the tee box, get the driver out, and think, balls to it. I'm just going to hit driver anyway and hope for the best. Gary will go there. If the play's a 3-wood or a 3-iron or whatever it is, he'll play that. He'll play that. He's got that patience level.
Yeah.
I think on clubbed down shorter tracks, Gary Woodland's always a play. 12th in Mexico, 8th at the Honda Classic. He finished, didn't he, with a 3-under-67. He jumped from 21st on the leaderboard to almost nicking me an each-way payout. And I just know what happens. I'll disappear, leave Gary behind in the rearview mirror because I've tipped him up a few times this season, and he'll go and win.
Yeah. At the price on offer, there's no reason to ignore him, I don't think. You know, you're looking again at Phoenix form in terms of the correlation with the... with the greens here, and you know
he's won there.
We've seen him win in 2018. He's got top tens back to 2011. Again, when he was defending the year after, he finished seventh, didn't he? So there's lots of different angles and aspects to like about Woodland this week.
The one thing I get heebie-jeebies about with Gary is his scrambling game. Can he get up and down when he's missing greens? Because that's a weakness. And for that week at Pebble Beach, yeah, he was like Seve around the greens that week, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was getting up and down from everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sometimes happens.
But strokes gained around the green, yep, you're not finding Gary Woodland towards the top of that statistic. But listen to this. Last couple of outings. 7th for scrambling last week or 2 weeks ago at Honda. 5th for scrambling in Mexico. Yeah. And actually, so far this year, in a category he's always towards the bottom of, he's in the top 40 on the PGA Tour for scrambling. He's 36th. So that gives me some hope that when he does miss greens, he will actually get up and down.
I don't think it's a flash in the pan, Steve, because if you go back a little bit further from there, at the Century, he was 8th for scrambling. It's a shorter field. Back at the Zozo Championship, he was 4th for scrambling.
He's been clearly working in that aspect of his game with a short game absolutely. Coach or whatever.
Yeah, it's washing through into his performances generally. And you know, I said right when we were talking about the attributes for this particular course, I want to see someone who's been scrambling well and consistently recently, and it's you know clearly that's part of his game right now. So quite happy with 50-1.
One thing I didn't mention when I should have done because I forgot is it if you look at the makeup of winners of this pool, they tend to be guys that haven't won for a period of time. Now, take Tiger Woods out of that. He was world number one and he'd won the week before at Bay Hill. But that's what Tiger Woods used to do. He dominated at 3-1, yeah? Jason Day had finished, he'd also won at Bay Hill the year he won this in 2016. But you take those two reigning, they were current world number ones out of the mix. And most of these guys hadn't won for a prolonged period of time. I mean, Rory McIlroy, when he won this last year, hadn't won for 12 months. It was almost 365 days to the exact day that he won this, a year later, after winning at Bay Hill in 2018. Mm. Oh, by the way, around strokes gained around the green last year at the Players' Championship, Gary Woodland was 30th. He was 3rd for strokes gained around the green last year. Yeah. So that move from Bermuda grass rough to this more northern state kind of mix, I think that's benefiting Gary. I think he's more accustomed to it because it's a bit more West Coast-like. It's what they get on the West. And we know that Gary in West Coast, superb player. So Woodland, he hasn't won since the US Open period of time. If you look at my other shout at the top of the market, I've really honed in on players that haven't won this year. And people go, Steve, you're bloody mad. What are you doing? But to me, a lot of these players who have won so far this year, they'll just come here and they're comfortable. What are they got to worry about? They know that their game's in half-decent nicks. Their focus is Augusta in 4 weeks' time, not this. They'll just keep things ticking over. I want someone that's hungry for a victory. Absolutely hungry for a victory. Someone that's playing well enough to win and someone that hasn't won for a period of time. Now, Woodland fits into that mould. I like that. But the one that really fits that mould is the scientist, Bryson DeChambeau. And by God, he's playing great golf right now.
Impressive last week, particularly over the last round or two.
That was the thing that impressed me the most, you know. Because he was in the bad side of the draw. He was two or three over after nine holes. And you think, well, Bryson's missing the cut. And knowing at that point that you want someone that's done, you know, you don't want people that have missed the cut in their last outing this week. I thought, oh, God, I was really keen on Bryson. And then slowly, he steadied the ship. He grinded and just let... He didn't improve his scores, but everyone was collapsing around him. And lo and behold, he ended up in fourth spot, was it?
Yeah.
And his weekend performance on that US Open Tough golf course at Bay Hill, yeah? He led the field for scoring across the Saturday and Sunday combined scores.
Yeah. That was impressive.
So that, to me, mental note, US Open. Bearing in mind, people forget this, he was 14th or 15th as an amateur at Oakmont in the US Open. So he's clearly got, he had the ability to grind when no one knew about him.
Yeah.
But you just think about it. I mean, look, fifth at Riviera, second in Mexico at the WGC, should have won it, but your guy Reed grabbed you the 50-1 win. And then last week he was fourth at Bay Hill. What is there not to like?
Yeah, the shot he played into the 18th on Sunday was kind of epitomised where his game is right now. He's clearly very, very comfortable and confident in how his game's shaping up. And to take the shot on that he did, just to clear the water by a few feet and to set himself up for a birdie on that incredibly tough finishing hole.
Unbelievable.
Last week. Yeah, very, very impressive. A fist pump at the end, he knew how...
Mate. He's in good shape, isn't he? And let's not forget that DeChambeau's captured six main tour victories in his short career. Five PGA tournaments and one European tour, the Dubai Desert Classic, which is a Rolex series, one of our best events over here, won that. But he's also won some big old tournaments. 2018, that really great season for him. He won the Invitational Status event at Memorial, which is loaded. He then went into the FedEx Cup playoffs and he won 2 weeks on the trot. The Northern Trust at Ridgewood and the Dell Technologies Championship at TPC Boston. We like TPC Boston winners for the players. And actually, his two outings here, 37th on season and 20th last year. So he's got that top 20 I like as well. It's all you need, someone that's finishing the top 20 around here. I just think he's outstanding, mate. He's 13th in the field for driving accuracy. He's first in the field for strokes gained off the tee. He is the best driver of the golf ball right now on the planet. Bryson, he's better than McIlroy. 12 for strokes gained tee to green in my 8 week trackers, and that strokes gained total form over the last 8 weeks, 6.
Yeah, all very.
He's over it like a rash in my opinion.
His long game, as you say, over the last, you know, clearly he's put on there a little bit of extra beef. He's clearly hitting. He's led the field for driving distance over his last two.
Yeah, and he's in the top. He's in the top 13 in this field last 8 weeks for accuracy as well, Paul. Long, well, incredibly long and incredibly straight. That'll work anywhere, mate.
Yeah. No, his game's coming together. He should be forming the backbone of a few of my DraftKings game or teams this week, I think.
By my very rudimentary maths, he's hasn't won on the main tour for 14 months. Perfect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, DeChambeau, the scientist, DEC. I've gone 2.5 points each way, 22-1. I got that with Coral, 7 plays each way, a fifth, the odds. And then to recap, Gary Woodland, the 2 points each way, 50-1. Again, with Betfred on that one, 7 plays each way, 50 odds. I've got Daniel Berger, a point each way, 66-1 with Betfred again on the 7 places. And 200-1. 10 places each way, Paddy Power, for Russell Henley.
Very good.
Any other DK plays you want to mention potentially?
Well, I've backed one other player outright. I've backed Gary Woodland, as I said. I think he's got a great chance. The other player that I've backed, which I said, it kind of flies in the face of your Florida point.
I won't worry about that. I said your Matt Every tip last week was a joke. So.
Yeah, we never know. Matt Kuchar backed 55-1.
He's doing something at the moment.
Yeah, he's playing well, isn't he? For me, he's a bit like Patrick Reed. For me, he's one of the more unpopular figures at the moment, and I think in context of how his game is, I think he's overpriced here this week, 55-1. He's got 3 wins in his last 34 starts globally. there's that kind of ruthless streak about him now. Actually, historically, we used to look at Kucha and we'd see, you know, the way he'd gear up to a win would be kind of 8th, 6th, 4th, 3rd, 2nd. You get him at a horrifically short price when he eventually won. But he seems to be capable of getting over the line far more frequently now. And guess, again, it's just that kind of winning mentality. And as I say, kind of that ruthless streak.
Where did he where did he fire off the line at a good tournament a few weeks ago? And he stayed in the top five the whole tournament.
He was second at the Genesis. He was the first round leader there. Yeah, he opened with 64. So that was that's only a few weeks. He finished second to Adam Scott that week, didn't he? He won the Singapore Open earlier before that in January. He beat Justin Rose. He beat Jazz Janet Watanabe that week, who was in some incredible form at the time. 22nd at the WGC Mexico on his last start. He opened with a 75 that week and then went on to finish 22nd, so that's quite good. He's got some decent Pete Dye form as well, won at Harbour Town back in 2014, clearly won here as well in 2012. Also finished third here in 2016, first round leader here 2018. And again, if you're looking for someone with a decent short game, Kuchar's there. His last two starts, he's been inside the top 10 for scrambling on both of his last two starts as well. So, yeah, all added up to quite a nice approach for Kuchar for me.
It's Ryder Cup year, Paul. We know this, and I do keep a very close eye on the qualification. Interestingly enough, Hatton wasn't in the automatic spots, as he wouldn't have been because he hadn't played much golf. All of a sudden last week, he's flown straight into the world spots on the European. Because this motivates players. They know, well, I'm not in the team. I need to start performing, mate. This week, this is the American list. Koepka 1, DJ 2, Reed 3, Woodland 4, Xander 5, Simpson 6. So these are all qualified at the moment. 7 is JT, 8 is Tiger Woods. Then guys outside the team right now. Finau, Kuchar at 10. DeChambeau 11, Cantlay 12. And you've got Fowler down in the depths at 14, well, relative depths. And you've got your standard names out. But yes, I mean, it's playing on the minds of a Kuchar, a DeChambeau, a Cantlay. They know they've got to, if they're going to get in that team automatically, they need to get their foot down.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's going to want to do it. Clearly, he was a President's Cup player as well, Kuchar, isn't he? And actually, we've seen, as we mentioned before, we've seen a lot of those President's Cup players from both the US and the international team having converted main tour victories over the last few weeks. So perhaps he'll be another one to add to that list this week, Kuchar. 55-1, I've got a first-round leader as well.
Of course, and, of course. Why wouldn't you have?
Yeah, might as well.
With your current form, mate, why wouldn't you?
And, you know, we talked about a few names of players who've got this kind of first round leader win equity over the last few years. And one player who pops up regularly in and around.
Charlie Hoffman.
Yeah, in big events. It is Charlie Hoffman, of course.
Mate. You know, listeners, genuinely didn't have a clue. But as soon as he said that, I knew he was going to say Charlie Hoffman. Because he played all right last week, didn't he?
He did play all right last week. Yeah, 13th last week overall. And scored heavily on the par fives. So if he goes out and does well on the par fives here this week in the first round, he could have a decent flying start. I mean, you look back, he led here. 125 is available at the moment. So yeah, he led here, first round lead in 2015. More recently, he led the Masters back a couple of years ago, you'll remember. He's got a PM starting time, which, looking through historically, hasn't been detrimental at all. In fact, if you go back to 2010, I'd say the PM starters have had marginally better of it since 2010.
Stick with me.
235 is out.
Stick with me. A little bit windier, but I'm saying literally 9 miles an hour. It's not going to be windy this tournament, but what they do get is an extra 7 degrees Celsius in terms of the air temperature, so the ball's flying a lot further.
Yeah, it looks a bit warmer. So, yeah, as you're saying, I don't think the wind's going to be a significant impact level for it this week. Fourth after day one at Pebble Beach recently, so there's a little bit of first round form coming in. And as you said, yeah, decent enough last week, 13th overall. So yeah, 125-1 for another one of these perennial performers in the first round after, particularly in bigger events. Charlie Hoffman, first round lead, 125-1.
before we sign off, and we won't talk players anymore, but before, I just wanted to have this, I had this thought as I was making a cup of tea before the podcast. We have got the Open Championship this year at St George's, Royal St George's, yeah?
Yep.
You and I have been to Royal St George's. It's got to be one of the toughest, most non-American golf courses that you'll ever find for an Open Championship. It is all over. There isn't a flat piece of land on the actual course, is there? It's all over the place.
Yeah, very, very hilly.
Last time they played, it was 2010. It was awful, wasn't it? It was an absolute grind fest. And Darren Clark won.
Yeah.
DJ was right in the mix, wasn't he? A young DJ, and Ricky was in the mix. And I think it was Phil in the mix. Someone was in the mix. Anyway. Luke Donald and the likes. If there's going to be one Open Championship venue where if the wind gets up, it's going to really favour experienced golfers, it's Sandwich this year. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone so far this year that you have seen from an older perspective or a likely Open Championship at Sandwich winner perspective? This only come to my mind because the last two tournaments on the PGA Tour have been so hard. It just turned my mind to the kind of golfer that you'd probably want to be backing for the Open in a few months' time.
And the US Open as well. I think,
Which the Oak point, they're playing that at Wingfoot, aren't they? Which is meant to be a beast of a golf course.
Wasn't there a Wingfoot US Open which was like +8 or something the winning score was? It can be horrific, can't it? I think the last 2 weeks would be a good indication. I backed Graham McDowell last week, and it didn't push through, and he was in a half decent spot early on in the tournament.
He does fit though, doesn't he? That Darren Clark kind of, and he's already won so far on the European Tour. It's Darren Clark-esque, isn't it?
Yeah.
Graham McDowell.
Yeah, I think there's...
That's the name that jumped out to me.
Yeah, I think there's potential there. And, you've got Shane Lowry clearly going to defend this year. And, you've got Northern Irishman who could come along and take the title off of him this year.
What price was Clark? 300 to 1? 250?
I'm not sure it was that long, actually. There was some logic there, wasn't there? Because I remember we put a long shots piece together at the time.
And we listed Clark, him, yeah.
Yeah, Clark was one of the ones that we'd put as having a chance along. But I got a feeling it was 150 to 1, but even so, that's a lengthy price to pick up for an Open champion.
McDowell was the name that jumped in my mind. When I asked myself the same question, he is available right now at 150 to 1 with Unibet.
There you go. Have to see how he gets on over the next few weeks, weeks and months. But yeah, it's again, until you get really close to an Open Championship, you don't know how tough it's going to be here because it could be blazing sunshine and light winds, or it could be horrific.
If it's horrific, it's someone like a Graham McDowell, isn't it? Or a Tommy Fleetwood again.
Someone who's going to get into that grinding mindset and stick with it for 4 days.
Paul, appreciate your time this morning. Get back to your redundancy.
Yeah, go and study up for the GGs this afternoon.
Study up for Cheltenham this afternoon. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for your time. I hope you have good luck. Let's hope that Gary brings home the bacon.
Fingers crossed.
And thank you to listeners. Again, as I said at the top of the show, some iTunes / Apple Podcast reviews are always most welcome. And it helps just to make sure that Apple are aware that it's a popular podcast and they help us in terms of their recommended podcast position. So it all helps. Thank you for your time. I hope you have a good punting week at the Players' Championship and we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.